Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
John Hines in for Shaletta on this Saturday afternoon, 8 minutes after 1 o'clock, 61 degrees in the Twin Cities. And you probably, I hope that you are aware of this, but the month of October is recognized as Breast Cancer Awareness Month. There is a lot of attention that is paid to breast cancer, which is still just a considerable killer amongst, especially women in this country. And I'm joined this afternoon by Dr. Abigail Miller, the Chief Medical Officer for United Healthcare, to talk a little bit about breast cancer and some of the things that we should be aware of, that women everywhere and other people should be aware of, I mean, as well as men. Dr. Miller, thank you so much for making yourself available to talk about this afternoon here on WCCO. How are you this fine day?
Thank you, John. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty darn good, as a matter of fact. You know, I think, you know, for most of us, we don't have to look too far. Oftentimes, you know, there's been so much done to make to heighten awareness of breast cancer and the problems that breast cancer presents, including the fatalities that come with it here. I mean, we see, whether you're watching a sporting event or something of that nature, the display of pink, which is kind of the symbol, not kind of, it is the symbol for breast cancer. It is definitely there. So are we doing enough to create awareness, Dr. Miller?
So, John, thank you for that question. And you're absolutely right. You know, certainly, especially in October, but really even throughout the year, you know, we all sort of recognize that pink ribbon as being the sign for breast cancer awareness. And certainly, I think that we're all very aware, and there's a lot of research being done around breast cancer to, you know, help such that breast cancer is more treatable and even curable. But there are still some alarming statistics that make it suggest that maybe we haven't quite captured and tackled everything yet. One of the things that I think is important to be aware of is that in this country, Black women with breast cancer actually have a 40% higher death rate than white women. And in Hispanic women, breast cancer is actually the number one cancer death. So that tells me that we need to continue to do more to ensure that people are getting the appropriate screening and treatment.
All right, let's talk about some of these things that constitute the appropriate screening, because other than breast self-examinations and also mammograms, I don't know. What else do we look for? I mean, is there a symptom or something, Dr. Miller, that somebody mm-hmm. should be aware of if they aren't already?
So that is a great question, John. So you're absolutely right. The thing that we tell a lot of women that a lot of women are very aware of is that idea of, you know, the lump in the breast or in the armpit. But other symptoms actually include changes in the skin over the breast. So redness, flakiness, thickening of the skin over the breast can sometimes be an early sign. Changes in your nipple, so a nipple that becomes inverted or discharge from the nipple can also be a sign. But I will tell you that it's important to recognize that 20 to 30% of women who are diagnosed with breast cancer don't have any symptoms. So that's, again, why we talk about regular screening being key to diagnosis. And certainly we recognize that early diagnosis leads to greater survival.
Yeah, I'm curious about the screening techniques, mammograms and things that follow along that line, as well as breast self-examination, as you point out, looking for lumps and checking on a periodic basis. But how good are mammograms at detecting breast cancer these days?
Yeah, so mammograms can actually detect early signs and changes of breast cancer, sometimes even 3 years before a lump is felt. So it's really important for women to start having regular mammograms for sure by age 50, usually going in every 1 to 2 years. However, there are some women that actually start even at age 40. And it's really between a woman and her doctor as to when to start, but certainly by age 50, every woman should be getting regular mammograms. It's also important to note.
Go ahead. Please continue.
I was going to say it's also important to note for women, under the Affordable Care Act, most health plans must actually cover mammograms without any cost sharing. So, again, this is part of those preventive service benefits that are typically free. So women don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to have to pay for mammograms.
What do we know about being genetically predisposed to the likelihood of breast cancer?
Yeah, so that is a great point, John. So thank you. So I will say that, you know, some common risk factors, obviously, as you've talked about, you know, just obviously being female, but then being over the age of 50 that's a risk factor. But then family history is an important risk factor. So if you have family history of breast or ovarian cancer, especially in your mothers, sisters, aunts, grandmothers, that is an important risk factor to be aware of. And if you are a woman that has one of those risk factors of family history, and you're, you know, getting to be over the age of 50, it might be important to talk to your doctor about whether or not you should have additional testing beyond mammograms. Some women will actually get genetic tests looking for, like, the BRCA gene, the BRCA gene. They may even be recommended to have additional breast imaging.
Yeah, I have heard about, you know, the idea of detecting this gene, and I know women personally who have gone to the what might seem like extreme measures, but are probably very thoughtful, well thought out, life-saving measures mastectomies, like preventative. I mean, it seems like a radical plan for treating the potential for breast cancer, but it has been known to save lives, Dr. Miller.
Yes, certainly. And you're right, in some women, and that really is, you know, that can be a difficult decision for some women to make. But in some women who are very high risk, sometimes that's the recommended next step. And so, again, it's one of those very important for a woman to talk to her doctor.
Yeah, I wonder, too, about some of the other things that are we've been all raised with that are for cancer awareness and things to do and avoid. How about along the lines of nutrition or does smoking likelihood continue? I mean, can that increase the likelihood of breast cancer?
So certainly smoking is a major risk factor for many types of cancers. So yes, absolutely. I recommend that everyone should stop smoking or don't start smoking, obviously, and talk to your doctor if you need help and tips on how to quit smoking. Other things that can lower risk for breast cancer, so maintaining a healthy weight. So again, as exactly as you said, eating that healthy diet with fruits and vegetables. Increasing your activity. Studies show that women who are more active, not only do that, it helps them maintain that healthy weight, but could potentially lower your risk for breast cancer.
Can I ask about the importance of reducing these risks? And at what age do you begin to educate someone about the likelihood, the incidence, the idea to prevent breast cancer?
So I think it's important that, we're always talking about preventive care, right? Even as with our kids, talking about going and getting those regular immunizations. I mean, that's part of just general preventive care. Things of, when we start to talk about breast cancer risk, for a lot of people in sort of adolescence, even you can start to, kids will start to recognize what, like we talked about in the beginning, what is that? What's that pink ribbon? Why do I see it everywhere? So that's an important time when you can start to talk about breast cancer. And then certainly, obviously, if you have in your family, it's important to talk to your daughters, talk to your nieces about, what their potential for risk might be.
Dr. Abigail Miller, my guest, she is with the Chief Medical Officer with United Healthcare in Minnesota, and she joins me on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline this afternoon here on Shaletta's show on WCCO. John Hines filling in. Do you ever think, Dr. Miller, that sometimes with it seems to have been tamed down a bit or dialed back a bit, but with some of the pink campaigns that have been out there, that it was overdone at some point? I'm just curious if you get to the point where people become sort of, numb to the message and you miss out on it. Or is it just the importance of just keep driving it home?
So you ask an interesting question. You're right. It does feel like the pink ribbon is ubiquitous and is everywhere. But I will say that I think it's important to raise awareness. I think everyone should be aware that, breast cancer is still very much a risk to women's health. And as we've talked about, I think that maybe we should use that to start to raise awareness more toward the fact that we haven't quite reached equitable outcomes when it comes to breast cancer treatment, especially in women of color.
Yeah, you mentioned, among Blacks and Hispanics and the rate there of survival and how it's been just taken so far backwards compared to among white women. What is the are there standard methods of treatment for breast cancer these days once someone has been diagnosed, or again, do they vary from individual to individual?
Yeah, certainly, John. So that's a great question. So you're right. It definitely depends on the individual and when she is diagnosed. And I should preface that by saying it can also be when he is diagnosed.
That's
breast
right.
cancer does occur as well in men. But the standard treatments might be things like surgery. So surgery to remove, a tumor or lump, and potential removing some lymph nodes can be. Treatments like chemotherapy or immunotherapy. Immune therapy is relatively newer, and it's basically a treatment that uses the body's own immune system to attack cancer cells. Another type of treatment that people can frequently receive is radiation therapy. And then for breast cancer, sometimes hormone therapy. So there are hormones that actually will help to slow the cancer's growth.
And these things, again, are all aided and greatly benefited by early detection in this particular case, Dr. Miller.
Absolutely. That really is key. And so that's really where we talk about, you know, it's the month of October. It's a great time to remember those important women in your life and remind them that it's time to go and get screened. Make sure they're getting screened, because earlier diagnosis is going to lead to greater survival.
Well, good stuff. Dr. Abigail Miller joining me, the Chief Medical Officer from United Healthcare Minnesota, talking about breast cancer awareness. And hopefully, if you are listening to this today, and even if it's not you, you are sharing the message with someone else that it's time to pay attention if you have not already done so. Dr. Miller, thanks so much for being on here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, John.
Take care. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes after 1 o'clock. John Hines in for Shaletta. More to come on WCCO.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season two. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon once again. 24 minutes after 1 o'clock, John Hines in for Shaletta on this Saturday afternoon. A little bit, it was 61 degrees right now in the Twin Cities, somewhere in that ballpark. By the time we get to next weekend, and I'll give you the whole forecast rundown here coming up, but next weekend, we're going to have morning lows that'll be below freezing on a consistent basis. Today, being the 21st, of October, is International Day of the Nacho. Jonathan Lowe, let me ask you this question. Where do you stand on nachos? Are you a fan of the crunchy, cheesy goodness of nachos?
Fan wouldn't describe it. Big fan wouldn't describe it. I'd be more in the category of, you know, the Tasmanian devil?
Yes.
And the excitement that he gets. That's the excitement that I get.
From a plate of nachos.
Yes.
Oh. There's a staff at Eat This, Not That, which you can find online, where they put together a list of the best nachos in every state, including Minnesota. And they came down with this idea, El Taco Riendo, which is known for their steak tacos, but they're also just doing a great job with nachos. According to customer reviews, a reviewer said the nachos were fantastic. The servers heaped on generous portions of meat and toppings. What are your toppings of choice on nachos, Jonathan?
So I'm a little bit more standard or blah, people might say. I'm not a big fan of olives on nachos. I'm not a big fan of not a big onion person. I'll take it. And I'm weird like this. I'll take onions in like a pico de gallo. If you put pico de gallo on it,
right.
That's great. But onions by themselves, just slathered on it, it's not my thing. I will take, like I said, pico, cheese, any type of, you know, cheddar jack or melted queso type. I will do, I usually tend to go toward chicken, but you give me a good brisket. Oh, yeah, brisket on nachos is muy bueno, muy bueno.
Do you slide the jalapenos onto somebody else's selection, or are you good with the jalapenos, too?
Again, a weird thing with me. If you pickle your jalapenos, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of like pickling things in general. But if it's raw, if it's raw jalapenos, I'll do that. And if it's like the sliced and you have the seeds in there, I'll just be careful because you know those can get a little spicy.
A little spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the idea for me behind jalapenos and on this International Day of the Nacho, the idea behind jalapenos is that they should be grilled or toasted. That just adds.
That's good.
It adds to the flavor. Well, El Taco Riendo, I'm probably saying it incorrectly here, but it's on Central Avenue, Northeast Minneapolis, between 24th and Lowry. And that's the home of what has been rated the best nachos in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you for putting that in my head. It is now stored and locked away in the safe in my brain, and I will be going there in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, sometime soon. El Taco Riendo. It's on the west side of Central Avenue. So if you're going down Central, if you're headed north on Central, it's on your left hand side there between 24th and Lowry. You can't miss the place. They do everything right there. That's how we'll say it. So, hey, a couple of things yet to come and something to consider. We're going to get into the Forgotten Five before we are done. The Forgotten Five from the National Toy Hall of Fame. I think it's actually called, let me make sure I get this right, because I think they are the Strong National Museum of Play. But they're the ones who are the curators for the toys that go into the Hall of Fame. And the Forgotten Five include, these are all toys that have been nominated in the past. And think about this, the pogo stick, the Transformer, particularly, I think, Optimus Prime. You'd have to go Optimus Prime. And then also on the list, My Little Pony, the miniature ones, the Pez dispenser, and that Fisher-Price popcorn popper, they call it, the thing that your toddler would roll across the floor, and it would go and just, you know, blow the beads up against the plastic dome, the popcorn popper. So those are the five, and it's a fan vote this year. So the fans will decide which of those five, the Forgotten Five, that have been nominated in the past, will go into the Toy Hall of Fame. So I'm going to invite you to text to me at 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. I put this on my Facebook page, and I'll tell you hands down what the winner was when we get to that portion of the program. But if you've got a moment thinking about those Forgotten Five in the Toy Hall of Fame, okay, again, the pogo stick, the Transformer, I'd go Optimus Prime, and the My Little Pony, the Pez dispenser, and the Fisher-Price popcorn popper. So you can text that to me on the Cities One Plumbing Talk and text line at 651-461-9226, and we'll share the results of your thoughts before we run off the clock here today at 3 o'clock. So it's 1:30 now. We'll take the time out for the latest forecast details. And when we continue, a great presentation at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. It happens to feature someone who is connected to my youth. And I'm so proud, sadly, that it comes posthumously for him. But a great artist and a great story to tell. We'll do that when we continue at News Talk 830 WCCO. John Hines in for Shaletta on this afternoon. It's 1:35. And I learned about this in a roundabout way. Jonathan Lowe brought this to my attention. A pretty cool exhibit at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. And I'm joined this afternoon by the curator, the exhibition curator for the Lyrical Artwork of Jim Denemy. Nicole Suckup is the curator, and she is a longtime connection with the MIA, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, to talk about this. Hey, good afternoon, Nicole. Thank you so much for coming on here on WCCO. How are you this afternoon?
Well, Well, thank you so much for having me, John. It is a true pleasure to talk to you about the artwork of Jim Denemy and to talk more about Mia's offering of this great exhibition. I'm doing great.
Well, you know, the thing about this that caught my mind and my eye is that I knew Jim Denemy. And I would say his pre-art life, before his time at the University of Minnesota, before so much of the great artwork that he put together, we kind of grew up together in that neighborhood of South Minneapolis. My younger brother was very good friends with Jim Denemy, and actually, you might find this somewhat interesting, Nicole. They used to hang sheetrock together back in the day. Only as my brother said, my brother Dan said, there's no way that he could keep up with Jim Denemy when it was time to go to work. So I just thought that was an interesting, but that's what first caught my eye. Tell me about his artwork. And first, tell me about who Jim Denemy was and how we remember him.
Well, I think you gave the perfect introduction, John. Let me tell you, Jim was an ever-present person in the Twin Cities art scene, but just around Minneapolis for most of his life. And I have to tell you, everybody has been sharing their personal stories about how they knew Jim. He probably was the most popular, and everybody just knew him. He was everybody's art uncle. He was everybody's friend from back in the day. And I first met Jim as a student at the University of Minnesota. Jim's artwork is truly unique. It is, in many respects, he was a traditional oil painter, and yet he presented his own perspective as a guy growing up in the Twin Cities, a guy growing up in Minneapolis in the 1960s, early 70s, kind of coming of age into the 80s. And he was also native. He was a native in the United States, a native in America, and unabashedly presented that perspective in his artwork.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I think that's important to point out, and we should mention this up front. Ojibwe, follower of the Anishinaabe traditions, and that's what is reflected in so much of his artwork, but not limited to that.
Absolutely not. I mean, Jim was always very clear that this is his perspective as an Anishinaabe, but does not represent all Anishinaabe or all Native artists. We have a really great work in the exhibition. It's one of the first artworks that you see if you kind of come down the long hallway at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. And it is a work called Eminent Domain. It's what we would call a monumental painting. It is larger than life size. It includes, though, his brief history of America, but instead of Mount Rushmore, he included Jimi Hendrix, Bonnie Raitt, Bob Dylan, and Elvis. And I think that kind of broad sense of humor around and not limiting the trauma, because right below the Mount Rushmore, or his interpretation of Mount Rushmore, you have images of his retelling of Wounded Knee, which is a horrible massacre in the 19th century, and repeated when AIM took over the then national park. And you really, really get the sense of complexity and this holding of space, but you get his sense of personality, his sense of humor that really acknowledged and hold both humor and the trauma of American history all at once.
Chatting with Nicole Suckup, who is the curator, the exhibition curator for the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy, currently at Minneapolis Institute of Arts. How long is this going to be on display there, by the way, Nicole?
Great question. It'll run through March 24, 2024.
Okay, so there's opportunities. You can't let this go by. But if you have a connection to where we live and the people who have long been a part of this community, Jim Denemy's life was not an easy life early on. Before he discovered his talent for painting, before he, I should say, stretched his talent for painting, he had a pretty tough go of it, didn't he?
You know, he did. Jim was always very clear that his life was a product of a series of repression and policies that really did lead to genocide and cultural genocide of Native peoples. And Jim also was a product of a failed educational experiment in South Minneapolis, which led him to inquire about transitioning or maybe even going to a different high school. And his guidance counselor said no. And so Jim said, well, then I'm going to drop out. And he, as he, in his own words, said, led a life of partying and addiction. Eventually, he did become sober and got his GED and enrolled at the University of Minnesota and really took nothing for granted. I mean, he really believed one opportunity led to another if you believed in it. And so Jim, in many respects, is not what you would consider a traditional painter. He didn't graduate from art school until the age of 35.
And tell me about the application. You use the term the lyrical artwork of Jim Denamy. Where does the lyrical part of it come together for you?
For me as the curator, and also just a kid growing up in Minnesota surrounded by music, music is a way to talk about any of the arts, right? It's either on, it's lit, it's vibing. And so many of those terms are equitably applied in the visual arts. For Jim, he thought of his sketches as kind of the foundations, the songwriting, and the paint as the lyrics and the melodies that kind of came in over it. And you see that, and you also see in kind of his mid-career and his early career direct references to music. But for me, I think music and lyricism speak to something deeper, more profound, maybe more poetic. And that is truly what you see in this body of work, especially the work that he was creating right before his untimely passing in 2022.
You know, and we should point out that, sadly, cancer took Jim's life, and this is where things ended. But now, through this artwork, it lives on, and you can see it at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. You reference in the paragraph that details the exhibit the artist's dry wit, because for people who knew him, knew exactly what that meant. I mean, he just, the things that he would come up with, the observations that Jim Denamy would make would just sometimes, you know, knock you over. Absolutely. And I remember that even as a very young man in this particular case.
Yeah, I think Minnesota has many great exports, and our sense of humor is probably one of them, and Jim is a prime example. There's a work of art in the third gallery of the exhibition. There's three galleries called Toast. And for Jim, he used Tonto and the Long Lone Ranger. For those who are maybe my age and younger, this was a really popular set of characters that were on radio shows and TV shows and movies. And one was a cowboy and one was a Native American. And Jim used that as a parody and also as a way to talk about Native culture versus mainstream culture. In this painting called Toast, the Lone Ranger, who is the cowboy, holds up a piece of toast that looks like it has the image of Jesus Christ on it, and he says something to that effect, and Tonto replies back, "But how's it taste?" And I think that is like, right? Like, it's so spot on. Like, how's that butter toast taste? And that kind of sense of humor, you see it in most of the works, not all of them. We were very intentional. I worked with Jim for about 2.5 years before his passing on this exhibition, and we were really thoughtful about not just presenting the most iconic and iconoclastic works that he created, but also quieter works, works that kind of played into the history of art and abstraction and color.
And, you know, he had, by some respects, a decent career as an artist from what, like some 15 years worth, but by so many in so many respects, just sadly too short of a career before he passed. But from 2007 to 2022, do you have some of the older works on display in this exhibit?
You know, so Jim had his first Minnesota Artist Exhibition Program exhibition in 2007. And so we really kept this exhibit to works after that very groundbreaking exhibition for him, his first show at MIA, if you will. However, we do own other works that were created prior to that, and several are on view in our American galleries. And so if you go to the third floor, you can spot a few hanging out up there.
Again, it is the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and it runs through March. What did you say?
It's March 24, 2024.
Okay, so there's an opportunity to get to the Minneapolis Institute of Arts and art and see this from a guy who was born and raised in Minneapolis and lived his life there. Although, well, I shouldn't say born and raised, because I think his family originally, I want to say Chicago. Is that right, Nicole?
Close. So he was born up in Hayward on the LCO reservation, and then very quickly before the age of five, his parents moved down to Chicago.
Okay.
And within a year, he and his mother and his family came to Minneapolis. So most of his life here in the metro and in the state. That's absolutely right.
Well, he touched a lot of people and left a lasting impression for many, many folks who knew Jim Denemy, and just a great artist. Again, the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy, which covers so much. Nicole, thank you. I hope you get a great turnout and an ongoing turnout now through March 24th, 2024, to see this this artwork. A great opportunity to see from somebody who was among us, but not necessarily one of us for all of us. That I know probably sounds a little convoluted, but that's how I remember him. So, and I appreciate your time this afternoon here on WCCO, Nicole. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. It's 1:47. We'll take this time out, come back with some more here. News Talk 830 WCCO. Good afternoon once again. Shaletta has the day off. She'll be back, I'm sure, next Saturday. So I just they went deep into the bench. I think by this time of the season, with so many of the players who are on the IR or whatever, John Hines got the call. That's me. I'm talking like I'm in the third person here. I don't mean to do that. Anyway, hey, I put this out. John Hines in for Shaletta on this afternoon. It's 1:35. And I learned about this in a roundabout way. Jonathan Lowe brought this to my attention. A pretty cool exhibit at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. And I'm joined this afternoon by the curator, the exhibition curator for the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy. And Nicole Suckup is the curator, and she is a longtime connection with the MIA, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, to talk about this. Hey, good afternoon, Nicole. Thank you so much for coming on here on WCCO. How are you this afternoon?
Well, thank you so much for having me, John. It is a true pleasure to talk to you about the artwork of Jim Denemy and to talk more about Mia's offering of this great exhibition. I'm doing great.
You know, the thing about this that caught my mind and my eye is that I knew Jim Denemy, and I would say his pre-art life, before his time at the University of Minnesota, before so much of the great artwork that he put together. We kind of grew up together in that neighborhood of South Minneapolis. My younger brother was very good friends with Jim Denemy, and actually, you might find this somewhat interesting, Nicole. They used to hang sheetrock together back in the day. Only as my brother said he could, my brother Dan said there's no way that he could keep up with Jim Denemy when it was time to go to work. So I just thought that was an interesting, but that's what first caught my eye. Tell me about his artwork. And first, tell me about who Jim Denemy was and how we remember him.
Well, I think you gave the perfect introduction, John. Let me tell you, Jim was an ever-present person in the Twin Cities art scene, but just around Minneapolis for most of his life. And I have to tell you, everybody has been sharing their personal stories about how they knew Jim. He probably was the most popular, and everybody just knew him. He was everybody's art uncle. He was everybody's friend from back in the day. And I first met Jim as a student at the University of Minnesota. Jim's artwork is truly unique. It is in many respects, he was a traditional oil painter. And yet he presented his own perspective as a guy growing up in the Twin Cities, a guy growing up in Minneapolis in the 1960s, early 70s, kind of coming of age into the 80s. And he was also native. He was a native in the United States, a native in America, and unabashedly presented that perspective in his artwork.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think that's important to point out, and we should mention this up front. Ojibwe, follower of the Anishinaabe traditions, and that's what is reflected in so much of his artwork, but not limited to that.
Absolutely not. I mean, Jim was always very clear that this is his perspective as an Anishinaabe, but does not represent all Anishinaabe or all Native artists. We have a really great work in the exhibition. It's one of the first artworks that you see if you kind of come down the long hallway at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. And it is a work called Eminent Domain. It's what we would call a monumental painting. It is larger than life size. It includes, though, his brief history of America. But instead of Mount Rushmore, he included Jimi Hendrix, Bonnie Raitt, Bob Dylan, and Elvis. And I think that kind of broad sense of humor around and not limiting the trauma, because right below the Mount Rushmore, or his interpretation of Mount Rushmore, you have images of his retelling of Wounded Knee, which is a horrible massacre in the 19th century and repeated when AIM took over the then national park. And you really get the sense of complexity and this holding of space, but you get his sense of personality, his sense of humor that really acknowledged and hold both humor and the trauma of American history all at once.
Chatting with Nicole Suckup, who is the curator, the exhibition curator for the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy, currently at Minneapolis Institute of Arts. How long is this going to be on display there, by the way, Nicole?
Great question. It'll run through March 24, 2024.
Okay, so there's opportunities. You can't let this go by. But if you have a connection to where we live and the people who have long been a part of this community, Jim Denemy's life was not an easy life early on. Before he discovered his talent for painting, stretched his talent for painting, he had a pretty tough go of it, didn't he?
You know, he did. Jim was always very clear that his life was a product of a series of repression and policies that really did lead to genocide and cultural genocide of Native peoples. And Jim also was a product of a failed educational experiment in South Minneapolis, which led him to inquire about transitioning or maybe even going to a different high school. And his guidance counselor said no. And so Jim said, well, then I'm going to drop out. And he, as he, in his own words, said, led a life of partying and addiction. Eventually, he did become sober and got his GED and enrolled at the University of Minnesota and really took nothing for granted. I mean, he really believed one opportunity led to another if you believed in it. And so Jim, in many respects, is not what you would consider a traditional painter. He didn't graduate from art school until the age of 35.
And tell me about the application. You used the term the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy. Where does the lyrical part of it come together for you?
For me as the curator, and also just a kid growing up in Minnesota surrounded by music is a way to talk about any of the arts, right? It's either on, it's lit, it's vibing. And so many of those terms are equitably applied in the visual arts. For Jim, he thought of his sketches as kind of the foundations, the songwriting, and the paint as the lyrics and the melodies that kind of came in over it. And you see that, and you also see in kind of his mid-career and his early career direct references to music. But for me, I think music and lyricism speak to something deeper, more profound, maybe more poetic. And that is truly what you see in this body of work, especially the work that he was creating right before his untimely passing in 2022.
You know, and we should point out that, sadly, cancer took Jim's life, and this is where things ended. But now, through this artwork, it lives on, and you can see it at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. You reference in the paragraph that details the exhibit the artist's dry wit. Because for people who knew him, knew exactly what that meant. I mean, the things that he would come up with, the observations that Jim Denemy would make would just sometimes, you know, knock you over. Absolutely. And I remember that even as a very young man in this particular case.
Yeah, I think Minnesota has many great exports, and our sense of humor is probably one of them, and Jim is a prime example. There's a work of art in the third gallery of the exhibition. There's three galleries called Toast. And for Jim, he used Tonto and the Lone Ranger. For those who are maybe my age and younger, this was a really popular set of characters that were on radio shows and TV shows and movies. And one was a cowboy and one was a Native American. And Jim used that as a parody and also as a way to talk about Native culture versus mainstream culture. In this painting called Toast, the Lone Ranger, who is the cowboy, holds up a piece of toast that looks like it has the image of Jesus Christ on it, and he says something to that effect, and Tonto replies back, "But how's it taste?" And I think that is like, right? Like, it's so spot on. Like, how's that butter toast taste? And that kind of sense of humor, you see it in most of the works, not all of them. We were very intentional. I worked with Jim for about 2.5 years before his passing on this exhibition, and we were really thoughtful about not just presenting the most iconic and iconoclastic works that he created, but also quieter works, works that kind of played into the history of art and abstraction and color.
And, you know, he had by some respects, a decent career as an artist from what, like some 15 years worth, but by so many respects, just sadly too short of a career before he passed. But from 2007 to 2022, do you have some of the older works on display in this exhibit?
You know, so Jim had his first Minnesota Artist Exhibition Program exhibition in 2007. And so we really kept this exhibit to works after that very groundbreaking exhibition for him, his first show at MIA, if you will. However, we do own other works that were created prior to that, and several are on view in our American galleries. And so if you go to the third floor, you can spot a few hanging out up there.
Again, it is the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and it runs through March. What did you say?
March 24
now.
No worries. It's March 24, 2024.
Okay, so there's an opportunity to get to the Minneapolis Institute of Arts and art and see this from a guy who was born and raised in Minneapolis and lived his life there. Although, well, I shouldn't say born and raised, because I think his family originally, I want to say Chicago. Is that right, Nicole?
Close. So he was born up in Hayward on the LCO reservation, and then very quickly before the age of 5, his parents moved down to Chicago.
Okay.
And within a year, he and his mother and his family came to Minneapolis. So most of his life here in the metro and in the state. That's absolutely right.
Well, he touched a lot of people and left a lasting impression for many, many folks who knew Jim Denemy, and just a great artist. Again, the lyrical artwork of Jim Denemy, which covers so much. Nicole, thank you. I hope you get a great turnout and an ongoing turnout now through March 24th, 2024, to see this artwork. A great opportunity to see from somebody who was among us, but not necessarily one of us for all of us. That I know probably sounds a little convoluted, but that's how I remember him. So, and I appreciate your time this afternoon here on WCCO, Nicole. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. It's 1:47. We'll take this time out, come back with some more here. News Talk 830 WCCO. Good afternoon once again. Shaletta has the day off. She'll be back, I'm sure, next Saturday. So I just, they went deep into the bench. I think by this time of the season, with so many of the players who are on the IR or whatever, John Hines got the call. That's me. I'm talking like I'm in the third person here. I don't mean to do that. Anyway, hey, I put this out there about the National Toy Hall of Fame and the Forgotten Five. And a number of folks have already started to weigh in. The Forgotten Five are toys that have been nominated for the Toy Hall of Fame in the past, but didn't make the cut. I mean, you'll find things like the Slinky in the Toy Hall of Fame. Of course, it's there. I think even the Etch-A-Sketch, which used to just confound me because all I could do was stares. You know, when you see some of the Etch-A-Sketch artwork, it's like, what do you people do? How are you able to do that? Anyway, but so the Forgotten Five are Optimus Prime or Transformers, the Pogo Stick, My Little Pony, the little miniature horses, Pez Dispensers, and also the popcorn popper. That's the Fisher-Price popper that you would roll across the floor, and it would just pop up these little balls under a plastic dome. So those are the Forgotten Five, and this time it's a fan vote. People are weighing in already via text. Not that we're deciding here, but I'll get you the details, too, of where you can decide. But at 651-461-9226, that's the city's one plumbing talk and text line. So right now, the votes are running in favor of the popcorn popper, which, well, I can share this. That's pretty much what it's been on my Facebook page, too. Interesting for me, when I saw that the Transformers, in particular, Optimus Prime was on the list. It's the only time that I can recall using my opportunity on the radio to my personal advantage to over an edge that somebody else might not have. I was bemoaning the fact once many, many years ago when my older son was hoping to get for Christmas Optimus Prime. Couldn't find one because the moment they would come into stores, they would just be gone. Well, I was talking about that on the radio once many years ago. And somebody called, I don't know, they were like a night stalker. They're stocking shelves at a Target somewhere in Minneapolis. And they said that when they came in the next time, they would push one aside for me. And I thought, well, that's kind of like going to the front of the line, isn't it? So I admit now, all these years later, that I took advantage of that opportunity. So I just, and I did that. And I'm not real proud of it today. I should have taken my chances like everybody else, but and I don't have any idea what happened to... if you know Transformers, you know what I'm talking about when I mention Optimus Prime. If you look it up, it's he was like the leader. And as I recall, they had the Transformers, and then later on they were battling it out against the Decepticons. I may have this wrong. If you know better, you can call in at 651-461-9226 and straighten me out. But I'm pretty sure that's the way it goes. Somebody did vote via text. And again, this doesn't count as a vote for the National Toy Hall of Fame and the Forgotten Five, but for the Pogo Stick. I never had a Pogo Stick. I tried one once or twice, but I didn't really know. Just bouncing up and down for me wasn't, you know, just that big of a thing. and I couldn't see doing it. I know that it became quite a competition to see how many times you could bounce before you lost your balance or fell off or stepped off. It just seemed to me later on like a great way to knock out a couple of teeth. A pogo stick. I'm sure it's happened to somebody. Jonathan, did you ever use a pogo stick?
I might have tried a pogo stick once or twice. I am not near that coordinated to have had success on a pogo stick. I have enough trouble with a paddle ball. Don't try to get me to do this with legs.
You mean the paddle ball on the rubber band?
Yes. Yes, correct.
Yeah.
I had enough trouble with that with hand-eye coordination. Don't try to make me transfer that to body control. No, that's not going to happen. By the way, you could have asked your trusty producer here about the Transformers, because that is my generation of kiddom, of childhood. Yes, and it is the Decepticons.
Those were the bad ones, right?
Yes, you have Optimus Prime leading the Transformers and Megatron leading the Decepticons.
Okay, got it. So, but Optimus Prime was the coolest one of all, right?
He was the leader. He was he formed from a robot into a huge trailer, 18-wheeler.
Yeah, semi-trailer,
and the color scheme was a red, white, and red, not really white, but red, silver, and blue, kind of a connotation of a red, white,
exactly,
and blue.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, again, this is... I am not the biggest Transformers aficionado, but it is in my quote-unquote wheelhouse.
Okay. Yeah, so you're familiar with it then.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Had a few of the toys.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, think about these things, and none of us do. I should have asked Joel Thingvall about this when we were talking about comic books, because you hear about those people who have the comic books in their pristine wrappers, but if you had a Transformer... Because I think they have to be to be valuable. You want them in their original package. Same way with Barbies and things of that nature. These things actually have some value. They're everything that Beanie Babies are not. So, the Beanie Baby thing. Sorry about your luck, folks. People who bought the Beanie Babies and were going to make... It's kind of like... Beanie Babies, to me, as an investment, was kind of like cryptocurrency. I didn't get it. I don't understand it to this day. It's 1:58. We'll take a timeout. When we continue, we're going to talk about travel warnings and more as you start to get ready. You better get ready, if you haven't already, for the holiday travel. We'll do that next year. News Talk 830 WCCO. Good afternoon once again. Shaletta has the day off. She'll be back, I'm sure, next Saturday. So I just, they went deep into the bench. I think by this time of the season, with so many of the players who are on the IR or whatever, John Hines got the call. That's me. I'm talking like I'm in the third person here. I don't mean to do that. Anyway, hey, I put this out there about the National Toy Hall of Fame and the Forgotten Five. And a number of folks have already started to weigh in. The Forgotten Five are toys that have been nominated for the Toy Hall of Fame in the past, but didn't make the cut. I mean, you'll find things like the Slinky in the Toy Hall of Fame. Of course, it's there. I think even the Etch-a-Sketch, which used to just confound me because all I could do was stares. You know, when you see some of the Etch-a-Sketch artwork, it's like, what do you people do? How are you able to do that? Anyway, the Forgotten Five are Optimus Prime or Transformers, the Pogo Stick, My Little Pony, the little miniature horses, Pez Dispensers, and also the Popcorn Popper. That's the Fisher-Price popper that you would roll across the floor, and it would just pop up these little balls under a plastic dome. So those are the Forgotten Five, and this time it's a fan vote. People are weighing in already via text, Not that we're deciding here, but I'll get you the details, too, of where you can decide. But at 651-461-9226, that's the city's one plumbing talk and text line. So right now, the votes are running in favor of the popcorn popper, which, well, I can share this. That's pretty much what it's been on my Facebook page, too. Interesting for me, when I saw that the Transformers, in particular Optimus Prime, was on the list, it's the only time that I can recall using my opportunity on the radio to my personal advantage to over an edge that somebody else might not have. I was bemoaning the fact once many, many years ago when my older son was hoping to get for Christmas Optimus Prime, couldn't find one, because the moment they would come into stores, they would just be gone. Well, I was talking about that on the radio once many years ago. And somebody called, I don't know, they were like a night stalker. They're stocking shelves at a Target somewhere in Minneapolis. And they said that when they came in the next time, they would push one aside for me. And I thought, well, that's kind of like going to the front of the line, isn't it? So I admit now, all these years later, that I took advantage of that opportunity. So I just, and I did that. And I'm not real proud of it today. I should have taken my chances like everybody else, but and I don't have any idea what happened to, if you know Transformers, you know what I'm talking about when I mention Optimus Prime. If you look it up, it's he was like the leader. And as I recall, they had the Transformers, and then later on, they were battling it out against the Decepticons. I may have this wrong. If you know better, you can call in at 651-461-9226 and straighten me out. But I'm pretty sure that's the way it goes. Somebody did vote via text. And again, this doesn't count as a vote for the National Toy Hall of Fame and the Forgotten Five, but for the pogo stick. I never had a pogo stick. I tried one once or twice, but I didn't really know. Just bouncing up and down for me wasn't, you know, just that big of a thing. And I couldn't see doing it. I know that it became quite a competition to see how many times you could bounce before you lost your balance or fell off or stepped off. It just seemed to me later on like a great way to knock out a couple of teeth, a pogo stick. I'm sure it's happened to somebody. Jonathan, did you ever use a pogo stick?
I might have tried a pogo stick once or twice. I am not near that coordinated to have had success on a pogo stick. I have enough trouble with a paddle ball. Don't try to get me to do this with legs.
You mean the paddle ball on the rubber band?
Yes. Yes, correct.
Yeah.
I had enough trouble with that with hand-eye coordination. Don't try to make me transfer that to body control. No, that's not going to happen. By the way, you could have asked your trusty producer here about the Transformers, because that is my generation of kiddom, of childhood. Yes, and it is the Decepticons.
Those were the bad ones, right?
Yes, you have Optimus Prime leading the Transformers and Megatron leading the Decepticons.
Okay, got it. So, but Optimus Prime was the coolest one of all, right?
He was the leader. He was he formed from a robot into a huge trailer, 18-wheeler.
Yeah, semi.
Semi-trailer, and the color scheme was a red, white, and red, not really white, but red, silver, and blue, kind of a connotation of a red, white,
exactly,
and blue.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, again, this is, I am not the biggest Transformers aficionado, but it is in my quote-unquote wheelhouse.
Okay. Yeah, so you're familiar with it then.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Had a few of the toys.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, think about these things, and none of us do. I should have asked Joel Thingvall about this when we were talking about comic books, because you hear about those people who have the comic books in their pristine wrappers. But if you had a Transformer, because I think they have to be to be valuable, you want them in their original package. Same way with Barbies and things of that nature. These things actually have some value. They're everything that Beanie Babies are not. So, the Beanie Baby thing, sorry about your luck, folks. People who bought the Beanie Babies and were going to make... It's kind of like... Beanie Babies, to me, as an investment, was kind of like cryptocurrency. I didn't get it. I don't understand it to this day. It's 1:58. We'll take a timeout. When we continue, we're going to talk about travel warnings and more as you start to get ready. You better get ready, if you haven't already, for the holiday travel. We'll do that next year. News Talk 830 WCCO.